From team, I'm Madison McGregor, and this is Mind Time with Madison. Today, we're talking about holistic health with Sarah and Stuart. Welcome to team, Sarah. We are so excited to have you. And before we get into our conversation, how would you like to describe yourself to our audience?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I know we've been in conversation for a few months and I really appreciate the work you're doing and it's just an honor to be here. I am a holistic health practitioner and I support women with healing their relationship with food and their bodies. I help them with letting go of yo-yo dieting, really cultivating presence in their body and really stepping into their truest self and really bringing them back home to who they are and what their relationship to food and their body should be. It should be one of worth and self-love and self-confidence and all the things that sometimes we forget while we're, you know, in being influenced by culture and media and society and the way that we were raised.
And it sounds like you came from my research, you came from a wonderful, supportive, amazing family. And yet, you know, speaking of culture, it did really impact you when you were young. And I would love to hear a bit more about how you got into the world of mental health and how that started in childhood and mm-hmm. what role mental health played for you growing up and in your holistic health journey.
Yeah, so it's really interesting because I did grow up in a really holistic environment, so much so that I was learning to meditate as a child. I was listening to cassettes by Deepak Chopra. I was traveling with my dad, and he was a public speaker talking about the mind-body connection. And so it would be interesting to hear a story of a girl that grew up in that environment that suffered from eating disorders for 10 years. And I know that that probably sounds a bit ironic, right? It sounds a little bit crazy to a lot of people. And so that's why I'm so passionate about the work that I do, because I think that if we grow up in that kind of environment and then we change throughout our lives and we're influenced by the media, by the people around us, by cultural conditioning, society conditioning, we're influenced by all of the just the things that we don't know are imprinting our subconscious mind, that's when we really have to take a look back and step back and say, okay, what is this influence? How is it happening? And then is it my role to really take on a new responsibility of how I'm going to relate to what I'm seeing, what I'm taking in? And for me, the mental health aspect really started when I started to model. And so I was 15 years old. At 14, I was scout. At 15, I signed a contract with an agency. And within a few days of signing that contract, I started to recognize that my relationship to my body had shifted and changed. And because I had this desire, based on what they were telling me, to get out of my small town, and I had these dreams to see the world, and on the other side of my dream, it looked like my life was going to be this, you know, beautiful, amazing, fashion-filled adventure. It really did impact me at such a young age. And then for a decade, it just continued to impact my mindset and my belief about my body. And I don't now, looking back, I don't blame the modeling industry. I took the steps to go into it. I signed the contract. I made that choice. I could have quit after day one. I could have quit after year one, but I continue to be a part of an industry, which now it's changing and there's a different approach to it. But I chose to be part of an industry that is very much about your external. It's very much about your identity is attached to how you look and how much you weigh. And so I can't blame anyone for that choice other than myself. And when I look at the wounding pattern and the story about why I did it, it was very much because I wanted external validation. I was seeking self-love outside of myself. I was seeking self-worth and self-confidence from other people. And I didn't have that inside of myself. So even though I was raised by these parents who were very holistic and taught me about vegan food, and my dad even cured cancer with food, I didn't have that self-worth and self-esteem growing up that a lot of other children have. I have friends who went into the fashion industry and they said, this isn't for me after a week, but I chose to keep going into it and to keep wanting this validation outside of myself. And every time I would go to another casting and I wasn't liked or I wasn't picked, I would go into the shame and the self-loathing. And every time I was picked, I would get that hit of self-love and self-esteem. And then I would think, okay, then I need that hit again. And I wasn't recognizing that it was all in my mind. And when I started to study meditation and mindfulness and spirituality, I was able to detach myself from the parts of the mind, the memory, the identity component, and the intellect. And I started to see that I was so much more than these stories that I created. And I was so much more than even the books I was reading about nutrition and all the different experts and wanting their validation. I was so much more than the identity that I placed on being a model. And I was so much more than all of the memories I had in the fashion industry where everyone was telling me I wasn't good enough. And so it was really interesting process of coming back home to myself and really saying, okay, it's time. I have to really separate myself from this and find those aspects of my internal being without the validation of other people telling me that I have it or I don't have it, and then feeling good or bad. I just need to find it in myself. And so I went on this very long spiritual journey, which we can dive into, but yeah, a very long spiritual journey of really finding myself again and saying, I'm so much more than my body and my mind. And what does it look like to have purpose and a why and a vision for the future that is so far beyond how I'm currently living and operating right now?
It sounds like such a challenging thing to switch from external validation to that inner sense of self. Mm-hmm. And 10 years of that, I mean, that is such a long time. And what was the turning point for you? And how did you start to cultivate that sense of self? It sounded like spirituality played a role, but I'd love to hear more.
Yeah, for me, I really had to make a decision. I knew my life was on the line. And I remember being in a hospital, thinking back to my childhood and just witnessing myself in so much shame and guilt around the fact that I had gotten to this place. Like, how could I be sitting in a hospital bed being told that my life is on the line when I know the power of food for healing, when I know the power of yoga and mindset and all the things that my parents taught me. And so for me, it was about witnessing the shame and the guilt within me, knowing I couldn't call home at that time. I could have called home, but I didn't feel like I could at that moment. And recognizing in me that needed to shift, that there was only one person that could get me out of this, and that was myself. And that's where I think the radical responsibility piece does come in. It's a piece where for so long I was blaming so many other people and I wasn't taking responsibility for my own life. And I witnessed, even after I got out of the hospital, the blame continued for a while, but I slowly started to become aware of it. So I started to shift it. And so what happens a lot, what I see in my work, is that we go from coach to coach to coach, diet to diet to diet, program to program to program. And our mind goes with us from each experience. And when your mind goes with you from each experience and you don't heal the internal piece of yourself that is seeking those hits of validation or what you're seeking on the other side of that coach or on the other side of the diet, once you finally take responsibility and say, okay, I am the only person that is able to cultivate these feelings inside myself. So what is that going to take within me? And for me, it took a lot of healing. And this is a piece of the mental health component, which I think is really important. We're seeing a lot more of, but there's an aspect of self-forgiveness and self-love and self-compassion and self-awareness in which we're seeing more and more, where when we're gifting ourselves with these feelings and these beliefs, things start to shift and we're no longer living in the shame and the guilt in which I was living when I was in that hospital bed. And so I had to give myself permission to forgive myself and the damage that I had done to my body for years. That was a whole process. It took many months. It took many months of forgiveness letters to the people that were in my life, different relationships that I attracted at that time that weren't healthy. It took many, many months of cultivating a level of self-love every time I looked in the mirror, every time I had a picture taken, every time I I actually stopped stepping on the scale, but in the beginning I was still stepping on the scale. So every time I stepped on the scale, every time I measured myself, there was a whole time period of that where I had to literally every single moment just bring my mind back to my uniqueness and my self-love and my purpose and my why and what I wanted to do on this planet, and that being alive was so much more important to me than the way I looked. And there was a mourning process of having to let go of the body that I was trying to perfect. And that mourning process took me down another road of forgiveness. And so where I'm going with this is just that this wasn't an overnight shift in my mind and all of a sudden I was back to normal. And I want people to hear that, because I think so often people look at my story and they're like, wow, you went from being in a hospital bed to now being a coach. That's amazing. And I have to remind them that it's been years and years and years. And I've had to develop this system within myself where when I do get drawn back in any way or do have that moment where I think, oh, I would love to be skinnier, I have to have the tools to bring me back and say, okay, Sarah, this is the promise you made. This is what you've cultivated within yourself, that your health is more important. And those tools took a long time to build that toolbox so that I have them on a regular basis. And just because my life looks very different, it doesn't mean that my mindset all the time is pure. It doesn't mean that I'm always focused on self-love. It doesn't mean that I'm always confident when I go out and talk or when I am here on this podcast. It doesn't work that way. But it's about every day showing up and saying, I have a reason to live, and this is more important to me than the way that I look and the ego part of my mind that's telling me something different.
And that's incredible. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that it was a process, because I completely agree. And it's so easy to be like, oh, she's an overnight coach, man. That's awesome. Which is incredible what you've done. But I love how you said that it did take years to cultivate. And what were those tools for you that helped ground you? And even to this day, because like you said, which I also like, how it's not always pure and you don't always have to be that way. You don't have to be perfect with it. But what do you do that helps you?
Yeah. So for me, it was really about recognizing that my mind, my emotions, my thoughts, my feelings aren't who I truly am. And so they're very much an illusion of what I'm experiencing in my day-to-day life. They're an illusion of what I've experienced my entire life. They're an illusion of my memories or the projections that other people have put on me. So when I recognize a thought that isn't serving me, I, for many, many years, or an emotion, I started doing pattern interruption. And so what that would look like was interrupting the emotion, the feeling in that moment. So whether that was just instead of going to the fridge or binging, it would be going on a walk or taking a break and saying, okay, as my coach taught me, pause, observe, and proceed. And so even just that little tool of saying, okay, I'm going to pause, I'm going to recognize the thought, the feeling, the emotion that's coming forward, and then I'm going to observe what is it that it's teaching me, what is it telling me, what is it presenting to me in this moment, and then I'm going to proceed in the most loving way possible. What could I do right now that would be the most loving, compassionate act of self-care possible in this moment based on how I'm currently feeling internally? And I would do that over and over and over again. And every time I wanted to harm my body, every time I wanted to show up in a way that wasn't serving my highest well-being, I would just take a step back and pause, observe what was showing up, and then proceed in a loving way. And so that's one of many things. I did a lot of, as I mentioned before, a lot of forgiveness letters. I meditate every single day. And for someone that seems like a lot of time, for me, it's given me so much time back. Because if you think of how much energy you're putting on the constant search for being better, or the constant search for dieting, or the constant search for seeking validation outside of yourself, or the comparison model or the self-validation model through social media, if you were to give yourself all that time back, would it be worth it to sit for 20 minutes twice a day? And for me, it is, because it fills my bank account with the resource so that when I go into the world and I see something that gets me triggered, I have that resource bank account of self-love, the self-compassion, the self-acceptance, the self-awareness to say, okay, that's interesting that that's triggering me. Why is that triggering me? Oh, that's so wild that that would trigger me. And then I just allow myself to be in it and be in the acceptance of it without moving forward in the trigger. And that's what meditation has gifted me with. It's gifted me with the separation between mind, body, and my truest self, consciousness or awareness. And some other things that I do, I created a lot of routine that was very, very much built on self-love. And so that looks like taking care of myself in the morning, taking care of myself before I go to bed. It looks like gratitude in the morning, forgiveness at night. It looks like attending workshops and events that people, I'm around community that supports me and uplifts me. So those are some ways that I definitely have cultivated that experience more and more.
I love how you reference meditation as like this bank account, like you're adding this amount of this wealth of self-love. And so that you have that there for you when you get triggered. I love that so much. And what role did your support network play in your recovery? Because it seems like you cultivated a lot of these tools from your coach and from the people in your life.
Yeah, it's such a great question. Thank you for asking it. So what's interesting about my experience was when I was in the hospital, I remember thinking that I didn't have a support system. I didn't have people around me that I could turn to. And that was one of those defining moments that actually served me. It was a moment where I thought, wow, I'm in this really dark place, and yet I don't have the community and the friendships and even the relationship with my family at that time where I felt like I could get the support that I needed. And because I felt that despair, it actually propelled me to cultivate new friendships, to cultivate a different community, to cultivate a healing relationship with my family and wanting them back into my life. And so for so long, because I was shameful of the way I was living and how I was living, I pushed so many of the people that loved me out of my life. And I think that that's really important to hear, is that we need people, right? We're instinctively part of community. And that's been something that's been around since humans existed. And so when we push people away and then we're alone, that's our responsibility to go back out and be with people who support us and uplift us and bring out the best in us. And for me, it took meeting my coach, Chandrash, who was so committed to my healing process. I only needed one person at that time to be that person for me. Even one person is what can completely radically shift your entire experience with whatever you're going through, is having that one person to love you unconditionally, be there unconditionally for you, show up for you. And then from there, I started cultivating new friends and a community. And now I feel so supported, where if anything were to happen, I know that I have people in my life that love me unconditionally and will be there for me. But it took me healing my internal experience and the self-worth that I was worthy of that community, which I kept telling myself I wasn't, but it was because I wasn't healed within that would attract that in my life, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. And how did you cultivate that self-worth? Because it seems like you were able to bring that person into your life because you cultivated that self-worth.
Yeah, I think for me, Chandrash coming into my life was a bit of divine timing. It was also a time in my life where I knew a change needed to happen. I knew change needed to take place. And I remember thinking, I need an answer, God. Like, I need you to show me that I can heal from this. I need you to give me something. It was kind of one of those moments where I'm not really religious, I'm more spiritual, but I still believe in higher consciousness and that we have this energy that looks over us and takes care of us. And so for me, it was about I'm so sorry.
Okay.
You can end this. Like, okay. The days of quarantine are soon to be over.
Oh my gosh.
Won't have this problem. Okay. Let me start from where we were before. So to develop that self-worth, I was really at a place in my life where I think bringing Chandreshan and bringing my coach in was really about divine timing and me just being so willing and so open to saying, okay, God, I can't do this on my own. I need support. I need help. I'm so broken and I'm so lost, but I'm willing to show up if you provide me with the steps and with what I need to really cultivate this healing process. And so I was walking down the street in New York and I saw this sign for this health expo and I was like, oh, I've tried everything else, but what's one more expo? I'll just pop in. And there he was in the corner. And I remember just being so drawn to him and his approach and seeing how he was talking about breaking the norms and breaking traditional thinking and how we have to get back to our highest and true self. And so for me, it was literally that when the student's ready, the teacher will appear moment. It was like this divine timing moment. And then from there, we started to break down the layers. And he said to me, I'll work with you if you're willing to hear the truth. If you're willing to hear that this is not going to be an overnight process. This is going to be a really long process. And I'm here for you if you're willing to embrace and accept that programming takes a really long time. And I actually am still working with him today, years and years later. I'm now going to India with him and doing meditation teacher trainings and studying under him. But it was that moment where I believe it was, I've had enough and I need help. And we have to be willing to accept the help. I think that was the time where I finally said enough is enough. And I believe that there probably were dozens of other moments of opportunity for me to shift my life before that moment, but I wasn't willing to see them. I was closed off. I was in this ego state of mind. It was all about my body. I identified with who I was through the physical. And so even if these opportunities to heal presented themselves to me, I wouldn't have been able to see them. But because I was willing and open in that moment, the opportunity was there. And I think that that's a really important piece of this puzzle is, yes, we need the support and there's dozens of different aspects that impact our mind and our mindset and how we feel about ourselves, but we still have to be willing and ready to step in and say, I need help. I need someone to support me. I need to have someone show up for me and I can't do this on my own. And that was my truth. I couldn't, and I needed him, and he was there. And I also brought in several other life coaches and therapists and different people along the way. But I think it was that defining moment of saying, I'm done with this. I really, really want to be alive and have kids and have grandkids and have a future where I impact lives. And so for me, that was more important than, again, the way that I looked.
That sounds like such a shift and really opened you up to getting the help you needed and ultimately changing the course of your life, which is incredible. And it seems like at that time, that's where holistic health kind of started to emerge for you. Mm-hmm. And for our audience, could you kind of just share briefly what holistic health is?
Yeah. Yeah, I love approaching health from a holistic side of things because holistic health really is just about looking at the person as a whole, looking at all aspects of them and considering all aspects of their being when you're looking at healing. It's also about looking at the root cause of sickness. And so from the holistic side of things, when I'm working with my clients, what's so interesting is that every single area of our life is interconnected and every single area of our life impacts other areas of our life. And so often we want to band-aid our sickness or band-aid certain aspects of what's showing up for us so that we can continue in the direction of maybe a certain relationship or a career, or not actually look at what's our truth, not actually look at what's happening within us that is cultivating these health conditions. And so for me, it's really been about looking at the emotional components, the mindset components, the physical components, the spiritual components, which I incorporate into the, what's your purpose, what's your why are you here? Even your career could fall into that category. It's about looking at everything as a whole and saying, okay, how is my career impacting my health? How are my relationships impacting my health? How are my kids and my family impacting my health? How are my family dynamics impacting my health? And then getting a really broad picture of also how is my past impacting my health and my vision of the future. And the past, there might be trauma there. There might be stored emotions from childhood in which a therapist is really good to come into play and to help heal those wounds and really say, okay, that's my past and that was trauma that I experienced, but how is that impacting the manifestation of sickness today? And there's a lot of really great studies that show that we manifest sickness in different parts of our body based on thoughts, feelings, emotions, stored trauma, different things that have happened throughout our life. And so although I don't work with people on going to the past, I also recommend people to specific therapists I work with to deal with those traumas, because they absolutely do manifest in our future reality and in our bodies. And so it's really important that we look at the entire picture of our health and well-being. And what's so interesting is that when you start to meditate, you'll start to recognize the parts of yourself that are holding yourself back or in the place of self-sabotage. So you'll start to see, oh my gosh, I just noticed I sabotaged my health in this way, or I sabotaged my relationship in this way, or I sabotaged my career, or my career isn't actually really serving me and I don't feel inspired and I don't feel purposeful. So therefore I'm choosing to eat a certain way to mitigate the stress of my career. I'm choosing to eat a certain way because I don't feel inspired on a daily basis. And so this is my escape. There's all these little stories that the mind plays, and honestly, they're not our stories. They're a story that your mom told you, or a story that your cousin told you, or a story you read about in the newspaper or a magazine or on social media. And when we start to pull back those layers, we start to witness ourselves in our truest sense and what self-love and self-worth and self-esteem look like for us. And that's different for everyone. There's no way that I can define that for you. There's no way I can define that for any woman. Every woman knows what self-love really truly is for them and how that looks to show up in their bodies that way.
And what you've described is literally what I'm going through therapy right now, because I'm doing EMDR, which is addressing the subconscious as well, which I know you're probably familiar with. And it reminds me so much of a book I read called The Body Keeps the Score, which you're probably familiar with.
Such a good book.
Oh, I know. It's amazing. And I just love to hear more about how you healed your subconscious mind and what that process was like for you. I mean, you described it a bit, but how did you get introduced to it and what was that like?
Yeah, so it's first understanding that the subconscious mind has this power over you, and the acceptance of that is really, really incredible. Because once you're like, oh, wow, I'm operating from a place of somewhat unknowing, right? So your subconscious mind is the imprint of everything that has happened to you throughout your life. And I believe it's actually multiple lives. And I believe that there's a lot of different things we can look at from a place of how different vibrational experiences are passed on from your mother and her mother. And it can be very much a lineage of multiple lifetimes. And so it's really what you believe around that. But let's say it's just the life that you're currently in. Everything that you've experienced since you were born is imprinted in your subconscious mind, which then impacts your thoughts, your feelings, your behaviors, and then your habits. And so your habits define your life. They define how you show up for yourself. They define your health, because how you're taking care of yourself is really based on the habits that you're creating. And so I had to start looking at, what are these habits that I'm currently living and operating from? And if I were to upgrade my habits, what would that look like? What would change for me? And it really came down to recreating a new identity around who I was. So I created a story that I was a model who I don't want to be triggering, but who, you know, who didn't eat or didn't, who damaged her body in order to look a certain way. And then I had to change my identity to I'm a healthy person who is cultivating self-love and self-worth on a daily basis and who has a purpose and who has a why. And just that little shift started to create this experience where when I noticed myself going into behavior patterns that weren't serving this new identity of who I wanted to become, I would have this moment of saying, okay, well, I'm aware that this habit isn't serving me. And so what is the habit that needs to be replaced by this habit in order to upgrade my life into this new experience and, or this new identity? And for me, it just was about multiple years, again, years of just recognizing, becoming aware, saying, oh, wow, I noticed that, that habit isn't serving me. That behavior that I'm doing every single day, when I get triggered and I go to the fridge, that doesn't serve me. When I get angry at my partner and I turn to excessive working out, that doesn't serve me. What would serve me would be to sit and hold my heart and speak to the little girl and tell her she's okay instead of avoiding the pain. That's what would serve me. And so it was about consistently asking myself, what would be an upgraded habit? What would be an upgraded behavior? It wasn't necessarily changing the thoughts or the emotions because those changed over time, but it was really looking about the habits. What would be the upgraded version of this experience that would serve my higher well-being and my highest self and who I am? And that really started to create a different belief system, which I think you're always going to have all of the memories and you're always going to have those imprints, but they impact you differently. They don't have this driving force over you. And I'm curious if that's what you're experiencing as well. Or
yeah, totally. Like yeah. It's true. Like recognizing that you've literally described it perfectly. Like I don't even have anything else to say because that has been what I was experiencing. And even when you shared about getting to that turning point in your life, like this is the life I've cultivated. Like, how did I even get here? That's what happened for me too. When I went into therapy, I'd just gotten out of a health crisis because I have cystic fibrosis. And so my whole life was running away from this health condition that I couldn't accept. And it's funny that you mentioned that, you know, the better habit would be to just like sit with yourself and sit with your feelings. And it feels like it's the least thing we want to do. Sit there.
We don't want to be uncomfortable. We've never been taught to be uncomfortable. I mean, even when we fell as children, our parents would say, you can't cry, get up. So we don't have that awareness that it is okay to feel uncomfortable, to feel in pain, to feel emotional. And so another thing that really powerfully shifted my relationship to my subconscious was when I felt those feelings, instead of moving to the avoidance of them, I would move to the gratitude for them. And so even that little mindset shift where we say, oh, wow, thank you for showing up today and teaching me something about my inner psyche. Thank you for teaching me something about what's happening in my mind. Thank you for teaching me about what I would usually go and push away and suppress and use food to avoid. Now I'm in witness of this. And thank you for presenting me with what needs to be healed. Because your body is going to keep waking you up until you heal the part of yourself that needs to heal. It's just going to keep pushing and pushing and pushing until it becomes loud enough. And so if we can catch it before it's screaming at us, and usually the screaming at us is when it manifests into sickness, but if we can just be in the presence, witnessing, grateful, it is showing up and saying, wow, this is part of myself that needs to be healed. This is not a survival situation. This is not trauma or this traumatic experience that's coming forward. This is just me witnessing an emotion in this moment that I need to let go of. And I think because our minds are often go to the worst place or go to, this could be a catastrophe, we're scared to even address the very subtle emotions that come forward. And when we keep suppressing through social media and through grabbing our phone, and an exercise I always do with my clients is witness throughout the day what you're using to not pay attention to your emotions and write it down all day long. And a lot of those are the cell phone, the food, the getting angry at someone else or getting angry with yourself, or exercise or the lack of exercise. And only you know what behavior is serving and not serving you. And you do know, right? I do think we know. I think at the core of who we are, we're like, okay, that makes sense. That's not serving me.
Yes, I completely agree. And it seems like when you finally witness those emotions, they're actually not that bad. Like, it kind of just goes away. Like, acknowledging it actually just totally fizzles away, it seems like.
Yeah, an emotion can only last for 90 seconds and then it will get transferred to another emotion. And so if you can be with it for that 90 seconds and love it and be grateful for it, and then recognize it's showing up to serve you and heal you, then we can move through them with much more grace and ease, and they don't take us down. That's the biggest thing. It doesn't take us down into this spiral where we lose the entire day because an emotion. We just allow ourselves to witness it, move through it, and then say, okay, what can I do in this moment to serve my highest well-being in a way that upgrades my health and upgrades my life? And that could just be the witness of it and the forgiveness of it.
And I love how your approach is, it seems very exploratory and not something do or die, like you have to this or have to that. And I really love that approach. And even the behavioral patterns you're mentioning seem like almost a game of chess, like, you know, this is a good move, but this is an even better move. And so we're going to do that. That's great. I love that so much. What's your favorite mindfulness practice right now? And especially in quarantine, what's really helpful for you?
Yeah. So something that's been really helpful for me is because I'm noticing in relationship to my husband and our life. And so often we were kind of passing ships, and now we're in home together for, it's been 47 days now. And so one of the best practices that I have witnessed in myself in the trigger has just been to go outside, and whether that's in my backyard or whether that's walking around my block with a mask and gloves on, it's doing a walking meditative practice. And so I'll just walk and say either an affirmation or a mantra. Sometimes just as simple as saying, let go every step, let go, let go. And I'll just do it for 5 minutes. And it really just shifts the experience in my body, where I would want to get triggered and angry. And then I would cultivate or create the sabotaging fight because I would want to hear that my husband loves me or whatever. And I notice in my mind what it is that I'm really seeking for. And again, I can give that to myself through just taking space, creating that moment of saying, okay, how do I cultivate this internal experience for myself? The first step is letting go of this trigger, this emotion that's coming forward, and then saying, what do I need? What would serve me right now? What can I offer myself in this moment that my husband can't offer me? What can I notice right now in my body that my body needs that, again, I could ask him for, but he doesn't know that, right? He doesn't know what I need. And so to seek that outside of myself in that moment is doing myself a service, disservice, and him a disservice. And so coming back to who I am and saying, okay, what do I need in this moment by letting go of this trigger, letting go of this painful experience that I'm having that probably has nothing to do with him, coming back to myself, moving through it. And then that could be a bath, it could be a hot shower, it could be meditation, it could be putting on some music and dancing. But until I get the trigger dissolved and am able to hear my highest self, I don't know what that is. And so that's been a practice for me. It's like getting it out of my body, coming back to my truth, connecting, asking myself, hearing what it is, and then showing up for myself in that way.
It seems like a lot of this quarantine game, and I mean, even without quarantine, but just the mental side, and a lot of it just has to do with addressing the irrational stuff, like you were saying, like, mm-hmm. like sometimes it just doesn't even make sense. But I love what you said. It really highlighted the importance of taking the time, even if it feels irrational and crazy, to mm-hmm. address it. And that actually is self-care. In a way, it seems.
Yeah. I think there's a big misconception right now, especially with the advertising and marketing around self-care, is that we get so stressed out and then we go to get a massage or we go to get our nails done or pedicure to compensate for the week of stress, right? It's like, okay, well, I deserve a massage or I deserve the pedicure, I deserve the nail. My nails being done because I've dealt with all of craziness throughout the week. And that doesn't serve us because self-care actually should be the reverse. It should be that we're doing self-care to build the bank account so that when we're stressed and when we come up against the triggers and the emotions that aren't serving us, again, like meditation, we have this bank account and this resource within us to say, okay, I can be present with my child right now because I took care of myself first. And so I think culturally we need to shift the mindset from self-care is something you do because you deserve it to after the fact to I deserve it because I'm human and self-care is part of my practice and something I'm worthy of every single day.
You said that beautifully and I love that. How you just structured all of that makes so much just resonates so deeply. And it seems like that irrational part is that inner child that just feels so vulnerable and wounded by something. That self-care, man, it's awesome. I love that. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you.
And what's next for you and your mental health journey?
Yeah. So I am working on a book with Hay House right now. It's the bulk of the work that I'm doing. And I'm really excited about it because what I noticed in my journey was I knew the way I was living when it wasn't working. I knew that diets don't work. I knew that I shouldn't be treating my body in certain ways, but I had never seen a model that was different than what I had witnessed from the media, from cultural conditioning, directly related to dieting. So with my parents, I witnessed the spiritual component. But when I went to actually say, okay, I have this story of dieting isn't serving me, but what do I replace that story with? Like what would be an upgraded version to that? And so I've written a book about my life and all of the stories that I've upgraded. Where if someone is in a state where they notice that what they're doing, how they're operating, how they're behaving isn't serving them, this offers 24 stories to basically upgrade your mindset and you can step into body love, food freedom, cultivating the things that we all deeply deserve, which is self-love, self-esteem, and self-worth. And so that's what I'm currently working on. It comes out next June. Wonderful. And so it's a little bit of ways. I'm also working on two programs called Fire Your Diet. One's a meditation series program and one's an 8-week course, which will come out soon as well. And so I'm really excited about that because no one really wants to be on a diet, but everyone wants what they believe is on the other side of it. And so how do we get it without going on a diet?
I love that. I love that. And your book, it sounds like you can almost like, it reminded me of like shopping, like you can shop for a new story. Like that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Where can people find you online, Sarah, and find your what you're up to?
Yeah, I'm at Sarah Ann Stewart, SARAHANNE Stewart, STEWART, on Instagram. And from there, you can find all my other links. And yeah, thank you for offering that and sharing that with everyone listening. And thanks for allowing me to do this interview in my master classes. Oh my gosh. This morning I'm like, there is construction around my house and I don't want the audio to be bad, so here we are.
Yeah, it's a beautiful closet.
Thank you. During quarantine, yes. You just have to make it work.
Oh yeah, it's all part of the aesthetic of this whole interview, which is just awesome. It's just a part of the times right now. Thank you. your time and your to be with us today. And for you guys watching, we'll see you very soon. This is Mind Time with Madison, and you can find more mental health resources at www.myteam.org. Thank you very much, and have a great day.